This is Messenger Insight, a podcast program brought to you by Oklahoma Baptist and the Baptist Messenger.
Welcome to the Insight Podcast. I'm Chris Forbes, your host. Today, we have a conversation with Gary Hawkins and Emerson Falls. We're going to be talking about Native American ministry in Oklahoma and beyond. Thanks for joining us today, gentlemen.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. We appreciate it.
Well, so glad to have you. Is there, for those who may not know you or have met you in person, could you just tell a little bit about yourselves and your ministry?
I serve as the executive director for the Fellowship of Native American Christians. Uh-huh. We have been in existence a little less than 10 years, and we're a Native-led, and we work in conjunction with the North American Mission Board, but we work independently of them.
Right.
And do ministry in a ways of trying to help our Native people become owners of the gospel, in the sense that they become the people who are, you know, self-propagating and self-sustaining, and trying to develop resources and trying to, you know, find people that we can invest our time and resources into.
Great, great.
Yeah, and I'm the Native American ministry partner for the Oklahoma Baptist, and I get the privilege of encouraging pastors, Native pastors throughout the state, helping some of our Indian churches, as we call them. Many of them are struggling and are pastorless, and so we get to assist them and come alongside them. And also I work with our Indian associations to help strengthen the associations.
Great, great. So I just wanted to first talk about just Native American ministry here in Oklahoma and maybe move beyond. But what are some of the trends and issues you see in Native American ministry today?
Well, I think for one thing, what we're seeing today is, I guess when Gary and I first started out, I think a lot of our churches, we depended upon Anglo missionaries and Anglo mission dollars to help sustain us. I think today what we're seeing is our Native American Baptist churches are becoming more self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that we have more, they are being led by Native pastors. And so there's a certain, autonomy as far as Native American churches being governing themselves. Now, I say that the negative side of the coin is we don't have enough of those Native pastors. And so about a third of our churches are pastorless today. Mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of where the state is. We're struggling. 90% of our people are still without Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be, as we try to advance the ministry, be honest with you, we learned how to do it in an Anglo context because that's who trained us.
Right.
And so now we're struggling. Our struggle today, I think, is to learn how to reach Native American people in culturally relevant ways.
Yeah, yeah. What are some issues that you see or trends, Gary?
Well, much in the same way, in the fact that we would like to see, there's a man named Hughes that developed a scale that I studied in 12 on church planting, and he dealt a lot with international missions, and it's like the doctrinal soundness of the Word of God. There's no minimizing or syncretism with that. That's forever settled.
Right.
But then the relevance to the culture, and I'm seeing today that a lot of people are trying to become so culturally relevant that the authority of the Word of God is diminishing in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So what we feel that the most important thing is to have a balance where it become a missional church, where a church could not only grow itself, but then reach out to other tribes, because there's a lot of tribes, a lot of people in America without any gospel presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And we desperately need, that Canada needs, the First Nations people need so much help, and as well as across the northern tier of America.
With I think I looked up as somewhere between, it's like somewhere around 550 or 60 federally recognized Native American tribal entities in North America, in the United States anyway. When you talk about contextualization and, you know, what it looks like biblically, there won't be one, right? Because there's so many nations and like the difference between tribe to tribe, like especially, like I'm not very experienced in Canada, but I would imagine it would, Native American life experience is different there than in other contexts.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because worldview is something that people have just sidestepped in trying to reach out to Native people or indigenous people.
Right.
And trying to make them become as the dominant culture in a sense of, and like Dr. Fall said, this is our history of how the church was done. But when international missions do reach out to people groups that are unreached or underreached,
right,
they don't come trying to make them as they are, but trying to find what God is doing with them and how
right.
you can come alongside of with them and doing ministry. And our Native people, it was there's so much historical baggage and there's
yeah.
so much culture, just so many things that people have tried to diminish culture. And I believe all cultures are challenged by the Word of God. There's no perfect people.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to just basically try to make a people become something acceptable to God based upon their perspective is so wrong.
Mm-hmm,
it's,
mm-hmm.
I think there's biblical backgrounds
right.
for that.
So when you're talking about Native American contextualized ministry and it being so varied, there are 39 tribes in Oklahoma, and we talked about the status of them being reached in Oklahoma. Dr. Falls, when you look at the Native American population in Oklahoma and the number of churches we have, what's the status there? Where are we at in terms of the state of evangelism in our state?
It's kind of good news, bad news in one sense. We have almost 200 Indian Baptist churches that affiliate with our state convention.
Mm-hmm.
And across the Southern Baptist Convention, that's probably about half of all Native churches. So that's the good news, and that and a lot of it's being made about that. But when you peel away the layer of the onions and you look down, a lot of those churches are in name only.
Mm.
We have a lot of churches that are very independent. And as a result of that, we probably need to do a better job of helping the churches that are in Oklahoma
mm-hmm.
To be more cooperative with the convention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Many times because the Engle missionaries said they were Southern Baptists, but they never made that commitment themselves. And so that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I say that to say this, even though it sounds good, it's still about 90% of the Native Americans in Oklahoma are still without Jesus Christ, and our churches are really struggling to be able to reach the ones that we have. So people look at us and think, you know, wow, we have the, you know, Gary's mentioned Canada. A lot of people in Canada want us to send preachers and want us to send teams and things. But those of us who live here understand that we're a missionary field ourselves.
Right.
And we have a long ways to go here in Oklahoma.
Yeah. As we look at, like we've alluded a couple times to Canada, the rest of North America, what are some ministries trends that you see as in your ministry at Phonak? What is Phonak, how are they connecting with tribes, ministries beyond Oklahoma?
There's an organization called Ethnos 360, and their approach is something that they're we're adopting in the sense that trying to, again, contextualize, but also to be able to have the people gain ownership of the gospel. And it's with the understanding that there are some things about their culture they're going to have to do away with, but then there are some things that, about their culture that there's nothing wrong with it. And they don't have to stop being Native, become
right.
a Christian. And that in Canada, there's a movement, a slow movement, a beginning of a movement, where the First Nations people, there's a Cree man up there that is doing a lot in the way of going about as evangelizing some of the other areas, some reserves up mm-hmm. there, and carrying the message and in process of trying to enlist people who will become trained to be able to become multiplying the effort. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to see is a multiplication mm-hmm, effort. Mm-hmm. We know that it can't be done the way that it's been done because it's too slow, it's not cost effective, and it's we don't have the resources, like Dr. Fall said, we don't have the resources of the manpower. And so we are exploring what, you know, the doors that God is opening. We're trying to figure or find out ways.
So when you say the expensive way or the slow way is the kind of the old American Southern Baptist culture or whatever kind of imposed over
the vast majority of Native people are not on reservations or rural settings. Mm-hmm. They're in urban metro areas. And the cost of land, the rental, all those kind of things, it's a detriment to the free flow of the gospel in those metro areas. Therein is where partnerships are very valuable, mm-hmm. where churches that are in existence that have a missional mindset can open their doors to be able to help people come in and do a church plant from their facilities. And some of the churches that are closing, perhaps, and I've seen that happen as well.
So I think one of the missional mindset that Gary's talking about he's talking about the old way. I think what we did was we would take a missionary and we would take mission dollars and we'd put it somewhere and try to plant a church. Mm-hmm. And what he's saying is in these urban areas, that's very expensive, very difficult, very hard to do.
Right.
So we're trying to find contextual ways that we can advance the gospel among Native American people. And one of the things that we need to do is not so much think in terms of church planting, but think in terms of bringing the gospel to a community somewhere and stay with them long enough to raise up indigenous leadership.
Yeah.
And then find a model of the church that they can sustain and support themselves. Right. And in a lot of cases, that's a bivocational church model, not a full-time thing. But they can support that. And then we get away and let them be the church. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think has hurt us is missionaries have come in and just stayed too long, and we become dependent upon the missionary, become dependent on the mission dollars. What we need to do is go into a community, bring the gospel, equip them and empower them and raise up leaders, and then when I say step away, we continue to be friends and we continue to encourage, but basically they own the church. It's their church. And I think that's the missionary model that the Apostle Paul used. And I think that would work well in the context that we're talking about.
Also, tagging onto that is the idea of coaching is really a good working model as well. I've done some of that for a young man in Wyoming and young man in California. Mm-hmm. And certainly it's not cost effective to travel those places all the time, but with a resource of the internet and Zoom calls and things like that, you know, the coaching is a really good tool for Native ministry.
Yeah. And we talk about contextualization and in contrast to synchronization, synchronization, you know, is taking Christianity and changing it to fit, and it's not biblical anymore. But contextualization, of course, we do that all the time in our churches.
Right.
If you look at just the standard Oklahoma Baptist Church, it's contextualized to North America. It's not exactly like it is in the Book of Acts. It's right. Contextualized. What are some of the contextual elements that are acceptable biblical, compatible with the Bible, that are practiced in churches that might not be practiced in other churches?
Well, let me back up one thing. Okay. In Oklahoma, if you go visit some of our what we call Indian churches, if mm-hmm. you go visit them, they look just like the Anglo church,
right.
Okay, except for the Native American people that are in there, because that's the way we were taught to do church. Mm-hmm. And so we don't do it maybe the only thing that we do is we sing some of our hymns, our tribal hymns. And so one of the challenges for us today is to find that contextualization and what it would look like. And I can just throw out some possibilities, some things. But mm-hmm. but for among Native people, for example, the circle is important. Mm-hmm. If you go to a powwow, what you'll see is a circle. Mm-hmm. If you go to a gospel singing at the Indian church, what you're going to see is camp houses around the church in a circle mm-hmm. and what have you. I say that to say, you know, it may be that instead of sitting in rows, maybe we want to form a circle where we can mm-hmm. where we can relate to one another as we relate to God. See, those yeah. are some of the things that we need to explore and look at that would be more comfortable to the way that we
yeah.
live our life. And if we live our life that way, couldn't we live our church life in much the same way, and so I think we're in the process of exploring and feeling the freedom to worship in ways that are contextual. Okay, our music is not anything like Western music, but it's beautiful to us, mm-hmm. and a lot of it involves the drum. And mm-hmm. say for years, we've been taught that the drum is an instrument that we're not to use. You know, that's associated. You know. But to me, it's like Paul and the meat sacrifice to idols. He understood it was just meat, okay?
Right.
But he had the freedom to partake. If a weaker brother was there, he refused to do it. And I think that's the way we need to do ministry. We need to find the things that are contextual to us, mm-hmm. but we need to do it with regard for those that maybe struggle with that. Mm-hmm. And so it's an ongoing struggle with us to find that right balance between...
Yeah.
Between what Gary called doctrine, you know, and culture.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, I wish I could paint you a picture of what it looks like. We're in the process of painting that picture right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's the Native American missiology needs to emerge from Native American leaders, and they need yeah. discipled believers who are taking the heart of the gospel and bring it to the heart of the Native population. I like what you said about the drum. I mean, it's hard to imagine Native American culture without the drum. I mean, it's one of the first things that you think of. Now, one of the things that I had the privilege this year, I got to go visit Native American Falls Creek, Indian Falls Creek. That's, you know, maybe a lot of people don't realize it's going to be 75 years old. Brother Falls, can you tell us a little bit about what Indian Falls Creek is?
Well, it actually began... with it was a product of the State Convention on Home Missions, but also the Indian churches themselves wanting to gather together. And so the State Convention, the Home Mission Board got together and found the place down there, and they began meeting, you know, in tents, and they just brought, you know, they brought chickens and cooked, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it literally was a camp. Mm-hmm. And just like all camps, it has evolved over the year. Now we live in, you know, nice camp houses and have
right.
a nice tabernacle. Mm-hmm. But what it is for us that it has always been and continues to be, as Native Americans, we are a group culture, mm-hmm. you know. And so what happens is, those of us who are Native American, we know, Brother Gary and I know each other, and we've known each other for years, even though we're ministered in different states.
Right.
I mean, there's a connection between us, and all of the Native people in Oklahoma, we know each other. We go to each other's churches. We know when they're having an anniversary celebration, and we'll go and support that. So we're a community. So what Indian Falls Creek for us is, and I describe it this way, is that it's a combination of family reunion and a revival.
Yeah.
And it's the one time that we get together as a statewide community. And that is cleansing and refreshing and important to us. So it's more than just a youth camp. For us, it's a family camp. We mm-hmm. go and we bring our whole churches. And part of what it is just connecting together and serving one another, ministering to one another. And it is the connection between all of our churches, the family reunion.
Yeah, and it's the largest gathering of Native American Christians in North America.
Yes, it is.
So it's not just Oklahomans coming in, which is great because we have a lot of tribe.
Yeah, and as I say, we know people out of state. I mean, there's a connection to us, and you know, if you know, Gary and I could talk about people that we have relationships with in other states. So you know, as Oklahoma, we're not isolated from the larger Native community mm-hmm. across the United States, and so every Native American church probably knows about Falls Creek, and at some point or another, probably somebody has been to Falls Creek. So for us, it's really, even though the majority of people there will be from Oklahoma, but every year you'll have a good population of people from other states.
Yeah, last year you had to the year before, the 2020, you had to, like, all the Falls Creek stuff was canceled, and you went online, and then how'd it go this year?
It was good. We had about half of what we'd normally have. It wasn't as big, but there was something special about it because you for us not being able to be together for almost 2 years really, and to finally connect to one another, it was really one of the better camps, I think, in terms of the fellowship and also the preaching and the singing and the things that we do to worship God. Even that was heightened together because that's a corporate thing,
right?
And there's something special about singing with 1,000 brothers and sisters in Christ. And so, having missed that, I think it was extra special this year, even though it was smaller.
Yeah, I would think that as a Native American church member, you're not used to large gatherings. So a 1,000 or 2,500, which is like the normal, probably pretty awe-inspiring.
That too, it is.
To look around and see people that are, from your background or similar backgrounds sharing. But there were some encouraging signs of potential leadership emerging, future leadership. Were there some folks this year responding to a call to ministry?
Yeah. Well, that's the great thing about Indian Falls Creek is every year we have people that surrender to the ministry. And In our churches, we have a shortage of leaders. We also have a shortage of Native American pastors. And so we had several young people step up and fill the call to ministry. And so now our challenge is, as Oklahoma Baptists, is to encourage these and help them to walk through with that calling. And whatever that means, it may mean Haskins School, it may mean OBU, or it may mean something else. But we need to encourage them and walk with them until they finally get to the place that a church calls them into ministry. And so we will. That's kind of the big. Many of our pastors and churches now made that decision at Indian Falls Creek.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important to us in terms of raising up leaders.
Like a pipeline.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Talk just a little bit about the Haskins School Native American track.
Well, one of the things that we know that in our churches, our population base is not always big. And a lot of our areas, our Native population base is not big enough to support a full-time pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of our churches, we're okay. A lot of our churches are small, and they're pastored with a bivocational pastor. And so what we've discovered is, now, I come from a seminary background. I taught in seminary. I was actually a vice president of a seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered early on that not everybody needs to go and have that kind of a education,
mm-hmm.
okay? And there were people that needed something other than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Oklahoma Baptist gave us the opportunity to have the Haskins School, and what that is it's not an accredited, we're not competing with colleges and seminaries. It's a training school. It's very practical. And so we can take a young guy or even a 50-year-old guy that's just called to ministry, doesn't know how to preach a sermon. So we give them a course and just walk with them with a mentor and help them to learn how to develop preaching.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest skills that our people need to have is, how do you work with people? How do you work with a congregation? And so we give them some practical things that will help them not to get a degree, but to help them to be a better pastor,
right,
more effective in ministry.
Yeah, yeah. So, Brother Gary, the Fellowship of Native American Christians, you're covering a lot of ministry. From what I understand, the Native American community is so intertwined across the map, so there's a lot of interaction. What are some ways that Oklahoma Baptists can be praying for Native American ministry in Oklahoma and beyond?
Well, there's opportunities for some of the churches to support in a way of opening facilities are making even helping those who do have needs for facilities that in another state that they could possibly help financially to assist them.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly prayer is the most vital, important thing, and that goes without saying, I guess, but it should be said.
Mm-hmm.
But Oklahoma is, I thank God, from Oklahoma and very missionary. Oklahoma's always leading the way in so many mission efforts. But to be able to do mission work on some of these forgotten or overlooked areas, but going not with a mindset of what I'm going to do for them, but going with the idea of even taking a trip in advance to be able to see how God is going to speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so many times people have gone with a mindset of I'm going to go and do this, and they have an agenda where God is always at work. I believe that no matter what, no matter where. And so you find out, like Dr. Blackaby would always talk about, you go find out what God is doing, then you pray about how you can join God in doing ministry. And that's what I pray, that God would help people have the understanding of, we want to be involved in Native ministry, but we want to be able to have someone to help guide us in a sense of doing some introduction or some type of worldview study or whatever it might mm-hmm. be. And that's one of the things that I have done with churches from other states that wanted to go someplace. And not that I'm an authority on everything, but but if I'm going to be talking to somebody about an issue, I want to be prepared to do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And just maybe having some Native people come to speak in mission settings and that are very knowledgeable about reaching into the communities.
You mentioned Blackaby, and I know that Blackaby kind of, I don't know if you call it a prophecy, but he kind of spoke that he felt that the next wave of revival could come through Native Americans. I know that Indian Falls Creek has been put an emphasis on spiritual awakening, so that probably that'd be a good prayer request. Spiritual awakening among Native leaders. We need those emerging theologians and missiologists to help shape that contextualized expression of the Native church. And really, there's so many nations, it's pretty complex. It needs a lot of...
Yes.
Any other thoughts before we go?
Well, with that final thought about Dr. Blackaby, once he spoke at our evangelism conference, and some Native guys asked if I would ask him if he'd come and address our people, and I did, and I asked him that question. If he said that and what he meant, and he said, let me justify what I meant. And he said, he started by saying, I'm nothing and I'm nobody. And he said, 25 years ago, if I'd have told you that one day I'd sit down with the President of the United States, counsel with him for an hour and a half, hour and 45, he said, you'd laughed me out of the house. But he said last week, he had done that with President Bush. And I believe there's no more people group, he said, in North America that has been so abused and so many, he named off a whole listing of things than the Native people. And in the world's eyes, they may be nothings or nobodies, or in missiologist studies, they might be labeled under that insignificant people group.
Mm-hmm.
But I assure you, our Native people are not insignificant. Although we make up less than 2% of the Native nation's population, by the grace of God, that's what I've believed. I'm joining him and believing that God can use what the world might consider nothings and nobodies to do great things that he might be glorified.
Yeah, if you're going to pray for revival and God will heal our land, pray for God to revive the people of this land.
Yes, sir.
This is their land. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you so much for sharing today, and we're excited. Dr. Emerson Falls from Oklahoma Baptist and Gary Hawkins from Fellowship of Native American Christians. And I want to thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed this conversation, you'll find more like it at our website at baptistmessenger.com. or you can search for us wherever you download podcasts. Just search for Baptist Messenger. Thank you for joining us.
This Messenger Insight has been brought to you by the Cooperative Program and Oklahoma Baptists. Visit us at baptistmessenger.com or your preferred podcast platform. Oklahoma Baptists, advancing the gospel together.